3, 2, 1, go!
Welcome back, everybody, to the Triad of the Force podcast, a podcast from Puerto Rican friends coming together to do deep dives into Star Wars and other nerd-related media. These are our Batch Fridays, when we talk about every episode of Bad Batch Season 2, today focusing on Episode 10, Eat the Rich. No, retrieval, but I had to.
You have to, yes.
But before we go into the episode, we want to welcome our guest for today, our amazing friend from Broaxium, Mark Perez. Welcome back, Mark.
Welcome Hello. Back. So good
Thank
to have you.
Thank you for having me back.
Always, always.
It's, These are always like, great.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's like one of those, you're one of those beautiful people that every time there's a new show, she's like, well, there's always a space for
oh,
Mark.
Thank you.
So like, always happy to have you now, before, and in the future. So thank you so much for joining us.
Awesome,
thank you
awesome,
so much
awesome.
For... I know we're like we were saying right before we started recording, it's three different time zones. Now he's in Puerto Rico, I'm in Chicago,
Good.
You're in California, and we're like all two hours apart.
A little intense.
It gets complicated. So thank you so much for bearing with us and you know and getting
before
the show.
Before I forget, congratulations on getting the stage again at Celebration, by the way.
Thank you so much.
You.
Oh my God.
That was excellent news.
It was a surprise to be sure, but a welcome one. Something that I really wasn't expecting because it's one of those things where it's like, well, they already gave it to us once.
Yeah,
so they'll want some new blood. And apparently like our submission wasn't that bad, I guess, to be selected twice.
Well,
in
apparently
a row.
It was good. Don't be so humble. Don't humble.
It was good. It was good. That's true. It was odd though because the submittal website had said like you had to submit like a 500 or 1,000 something like that. There was like a amount of words that you had to submit, and so I wrote the thing and I was pretty proud of it, right? And then, but when I was trying to hit submit, it didn't accept the amount of words. So I had to like keep whittling it down until it was basically like a bastardized small paragraph version
exactly.
of the original thing that I had written. So
it was like,
cut down your manifesto, man.
They cut down my Nemec moment there. And they threw a crate of coins at me basically like on the website and totally killed it. But apparently, like I was able, we were able to dilute it,
salvage it,
to the essence enough that the good folks at Lucasfilm appreciate it. So thank you for that. Obviously, we're shitting bricks, because it's still getting nervous, right? And it's exactly now
course.
It's in London, it's a different
it's
crowd.
It's London. Yeah, oh, that's amazing.
So yes, we're looking. I don't have any flights, so it's like we. We're scheduled to a panel, but I don't even have hotel or flights. But whatever. If I have to sleep with the queen, that would be bad because she's dead.
Well,
if
exactly.
I have to sleep with Camilla to be able to have somewhere to stay, we're gonna do it. But anyway, how have things with you, man? Like
good. Good. You know, it's been couple of busy work weeks, so that's been taking up a good chunk of my time and my head space. I finally had to like calm down because like last couple weeks has been stressing me out, but it's better. We're freezing out here in SF, which is cold for us.
That.
The weather, we might get some snow up here in the hills. So yeah, it's an interesting time to say the least.
That's not normal.
No,
right?
Not at all. No. I mean, it's like Long Beach. My friends down there, the hail's coming down out there. It looks like freaking snow to them. And they're like, we moved down here so we would be away from this. And look what's going on. So...
Climate change isn't real, though.
Yeah,
right?
No,
right.
Not at all. Not
right.
at all. It doesn't matter if we're turning into hawk. Who cares?
Exactly. Exactly. Well, sorry to hear that. I mean, hopefully you're keeping warm indoors.
Yeah, no.
Because I sympathize. Chicago is not known for being a warm place during the winter. So
We got a little taste of that at Celebration, so.
And it was warm by then. Like, at that point, we're just, like, in our light jackets.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was fun. But before we get going with the whole episode, what have you been thinking about Bad Batch so far? Has season two been See, my accent's still coming out because I was in Puerto Rico for 2 months. how has the show been treating you so far? Is it meeting your expectations? Like, how is it stacking up to season one? Is it better? Is it worse? What are you thinking so far?
I'm enjoying it more than season one, to be honest. It's been a lot of fun. Because I think we've already been afforded the opportunity of getting to know these characters. And while we're still getting to know them, of course, a lot of the groundwork has been laid down. And so we get to see a little more of, you know, the growing part for these characters. Mm-hmm. And Omega's obviously older now as well, too. And I love that she's able to contribute a little more and fight more and get in there, right? You know, because, yeah, of course, they're going to still want to take care of her and everything, but she's holding her own and it's great. Mm-hmm. So that's been a lot of fun to see, you know. Mm-hmm. I love seeing her with a little bow and arrow because she gets right in there with it.
Especially in today's episode. 100%. It's something that we keep saying like in every episode, because I don't know how like the geniuses over there at the animation department just make each episode look more beautiful than the last one. It's like the colors are like amazing. Like the atmospheres are great. Mm-hmm. Like all those map paintings for the backgrounds are just stupendous. It's just so beautiful. The music, everything really like surpasses what came before it. And it's just like, and season one looked great. I mean, it's not to knock season one. Season one looked amazing. But like season two is just like taking it to that next level where it's just like, can't wait to see more. Especially with an episode like this, which was like so dark to an extent, but still so beautifully animated and colorful. That's kind of like really, it was really fun to kind of see that dichotomy of like all the colorful aspects of the minds and everything, but then, you know, the darkness of the themes and the tones. But we'll get to that. We'll get to that. Yeah. Nani, what was the name of this episode? I keep forgetting. It's not Arrival.
Retrieval.
It's Retrieval. It's Retrieval. So let's talk about this thing. Because I think it's a really good episode. I really enjoyed it. As with a lot of the episodes in this season, lots of callbacks to Indiana Jones, and we'll get to that. But controversial from what I've seen on the socials. As with anything with Star Wars, lots of people using the dreaded term filler to describe it. I wouldn't go to that extent, we'll get to that, but let's have our like initial reactions to the episode. Nani, what did you think about this episode?
Well, I was really excited that they did like another duology. I wasn't expecting it so fast after that when we got like episodes, what was it, 7 and 8, I think. So I was really excited that last episode ended like open-ended. They didn't get rescued, nothing happened, and I didn't really know what to expect today, if it was just going to be the rescue. I wasn't really expecting this like child labor, you know, forced like just kind of horrible thing happening, you know. And we had all these theories about who the person who stole the ship could be. They were all completely wrong. Really was not expecting it to be this kid that seems like really annoying at first, and then you see like what he's actually going through, like these kids having to one up each other for food rations and water rations, which is just crazy. And I really love that the batch ended up like having to save themselves. They didn't have to like wait for some other hero or whatever to come and save them, and they had to just do it themselves, get their home back. So I really actually enjoyed it, and I love the theme of, you know, the space cowboys. The soundtrack sometimes reminds me a little bit of Firefly, which is one of my all-time favorite shows, and I thought it was great. I don't understand why everybody uses so much filler, because we've seen a lot of the characters that were introduced to like come back and have something to do with forwarding the story. And to add to that, we also have, you know, the suspicions on Cid keep mounting because she never showed up to help. So it's looking a little dark there for Cid. But I enjoyed the episode. So
Mark, what about you?
I enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun. You know, just seeing what was going on this planet. If they hadn't gotten their ship stolen, they would have been aware of what was happening with this, I would say, crime boss, you know, and like, you know, taking advantage of like these poor space twinks. It's like, it's like, seriously. And then it's like, Yeah, it is. There's all these elements, like you said, of like Indiana Jones in it, you know, little Oliver Twist, little Annie, just all of that, right? These poor disadvantaged kids being like, I want to say kids, but teenagers, maybe young adults, right? Being taken advantage of. And so, yeah, like you said, there's elements of like child labor in there, or just like taking advantage of people who just can't fend for themselves, you know, they have nobody but this supposed parental figure who takes complete advantage of them. And
the rich getting richer.
Yeah. And so it's like, it's funny though, you may think that this may not be pushing the story along, but the clones are doing, they're being good out in the universe, right? You know, and that's how they get the payback, you know, because along the way, they're making all these friends and, you know, somebody's going to be able to help them when the time comes, right? You know, all these friends they're making along the way, it's all going to come to a head, I think, at some point.
No, I agree. Because especially so far, like every time that they're helping someone, it's by accident. They're placed in a situation where like they're not initially. It's kind of reminds me like Qui-Gon in episode one, right? Like, oh, it didn't really come to Tatooine to free some slaves. Which is kind of like, whoa, Qui-Gon. It's like, whoa.
I know.
Are you a Jedi? It's like, come on. I would think that you know. You would go out of your way to do that.
That would be a thing to do.
But that's a conversation for another day.
Because, right, you know, exactly.
So it was kind of the same thing with the Bad Batch. You know, they're always in a situation where they're there for their self-gain and self-preservation. And somehow that situation kind of takes a left turn always, where they kind of have to confront the dark side of what they're doing. And that dark side inevitably leads them to need to take action against that. But it's always, again, by accident. And one of the things that I really appreciate about this episode is, and I hope it pays off like now, because we keep seeing like, you know, the little trail of breadcrumbs of them finally realizing that they have to do something for the galaxy instead of like being apathetic to it. But the ending of this episode was basically that, where they're just like, oh, like there's a lot of systems with bad people just like this. And then with the, well, also the realization, oh, but there's a lot of people like us.
Like too. Us.
And it's and like for me, that's like their call to action, right? That's them being like, okay, wait. Child labor brings no good.
Not okay.
Not okay. Let's start doing something about it. So like hopefully like this is, and that's why I don't like this. I mean, filler is subjective, right? Maybe for some people, the Palpatine episodes were filler, right? So it's just like, it just depends on like how you're viewing the content that is given to you. And like this episode, I think was important for the Batch to kind of understand the state of the galaxy, that it's not their own bad things don't only happen when the Empire is involved. Bad things happen and like you have to like take a stand against all evil regardless of its shape or its form. So I think that was like the most important part of this episode, besides the eat the rich, because I loved it that some people were cynical about it, like online being like a billionaire company talking about anti-capitalist things. It's like hypocrisy. I mean, sure, we can debate all day, right, about like who gets to talk about what's right or wrong and in what way. But I think at the end of the day, it's a net positive. I don't care who it comes from, if they're taking a stand to say like, hey, these kind of systems of oppression are wrong. If it kind of plants that seed, especially because the show, right, is for a younger audience, if it kind of starts planting those seeds to be like, be able to see the world in a different way and be able to question that world and not acquiesce and be like, okay, I can be a disruptor. It's a net positive, right? So eat the rich. I think that was wonderful. What did you guys think? Do you think that metaphor was a little too heavy-handed, or do you think that it was just like Star Wars-y enough to be able to say what it needed to say but still function within the parameters of the story? Mark, what do you think?
I mean, I don't think it was too heavy-handed. I mean, because in one form or another, we've always gotten this in cartoons or other stories, right? It's just always been there. I just think that people are a little more sensitive to it now because they sit there and bootlick those like rich people that are out there more than ever before. And it's like, look, it's like, if you're taking it personal, that's on you. What does that say about you? So, you know,
it
to me, it was a story. I think it presented it very well and it was still fun. And like, you know, you learned something from it. If you didn't look at it through that lens and you realize, oh, this is, this happens in real life. I didn't know that, right? There were a lot of stories like that from when I was a kid that I went and researched further, you know, upon learning that this was out in the world, right? I was like, oh, that's like that self-realization. It's like, oh, I can't believe that's been going on under my nose all this time, you know, as you start growing into a young adult or and into adults, you go into university, it gets even more and more apparent, obviously. You know, but yeah, I think it is important, but it could have been so much worse if they were saying that it was heavy-handed. I think it was just right. It was fun. Come on.
Yeah.
I agree. Honey, how about you?
Well, it was still definitely Star Wars. I mean,
yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
They're fighting for their home. They find these kids that are being abused and they, you know, have a hand in like dethroning this mob boss who's just taking advantage of everybody. And just because the show is geared more towards a younger audience doesn't mean that you have to talk down to them. I mean, a lot of children are very much able to understand all these things that are happening. And if you start teaching them about the truths of society from an early age, they're it's going to make it easier when they are, you know, sent out into the world and have to deal with these realities. So I think the more information we give to our children, the better prepared they're going to be. So that shows that are, you know, even geared to younger people. And obviously a lot of us adults love them too. You can still have important themes within the framework and still have a good story shine through and make it make sense for the batch to be involved in that. So I think it was great. And I loved how it all started about with the young adults, like trying to one up each other. And like, it's always this horrible, like ambience of competition because whoever's doing the best is going to get the most food or the best position. And then towards the end, once you remove that bad factor of abuse, they're actually a cooperative now. So it's like, it's great commentary.
Become
on
a union, man. You got to unionize. So, you know? They're like, they're Starbucks, you know? It's just like, no, we got to fight the powers that be. But I thought that was the genius part of this all. Like, it's just like how you crammed into, like, it's what, 20 some odd minute episode. And you crammed in so much commentary about the capitalist and social structures that we're, you know, being oppressed by currently. And it's like those little scenes are just like wonderful, especially with the whole when I forgot the kid's name, but when he's confronting like the older twink and they're fighting about like who gets, Benny,
the younger kid, yes.
When they're fighting about who gets the reward over the rations and all that stuff. Yeah. And it's like, that's what they do to us. Like they make us fight against each other so that we get distracted and we don't see that we're the enemy isn't each other. Like we're willing to fight together. Yeah. Like we shouldn't be fighting over those scraps that they just gave us. Like the enemy's like a buff and we always have to be punching up. And I think that's such a simple way to kind of start showing that, you know, like all these systems of oppression want to distract us and want us to look down. Don't want us to look up. Don't want us to peer through the window. Don't want us to check the books. Always follow the paper trail. There's always a paper trail. Keep us distracted in that way, which is like a lot of the things that happen with like the electoral results that we get. We just have people that are advocating against their own self-interest because they are in this culture war where we just have to like fight against each other instead of like realizing that each other is not the enemy. The enemy is the fat pigs, right, that are, you know, like above us. Oh my god, so good. I loved it. I'm just like, I was like, Star Wars, let's burn the world down. Let's do it. Let's start from scratch. I fired up. And also I have lots of callbacks to Temple of Doom specifically. And I think that's one of the things that I also really appreciated about the episode, like how I was able to do the Temple of Doom child labor camp thing, but without being culturally insensitive. Temple of Doom.
Yes.
Let's be frank here. Maybe not the best cultural depictions. Sorry, someone had to say it. Mark, I'm curious because we just had like our Indian, and this is a little tangent. We just had like our Indiana Jones episode with Alex, and we were talking about Raiders of the Lost Ark and Last Crusade. And in a future episode, we're going to talk about Temple and Kingdom. But I'm curious to know, like, where does Temple of Doom? Because I've realized that this is a spicy conversation sometimes. Where does Temple fall in your, you know, in your ranking of the original four?
originally, so let's just say that when I was a kid, I didn't know any better, right? So I always loved it because it was an Indiana Jones movie, right? And then obviously when I got older, it's like, and I realized what was going on and hearing people talk about it, I was like, oh. So even though for being problematic, it would have to be at the bottom of the list. And then and after that, it would be, whatchamacallit? Oh, why am I forgetting? The Indiana Jones versus the Space Aliens.
Oh, Kingdom. Kingdom versus
Kingdom. Kingdom. So I would have to say that even though I love the first movie, Last Crusade is still my favorite one out of all the films. And then Raiders. So, yeah.
That's
how I would recommend.
I agree.
Last Crusade is so good.
Last Crusade
is the best. It's the best. It's got Sean Connery. Like being awkwardly sweet, you know. It's
Right.
But I agree. Bumbling like, I'm always very sus. I'm always very sus about people that like have Temple higher on that list. It's like, I don't know. Like, even as a kid, I didn't really enjoy that movie.
There's elements that are cool. There are elements that are great to that film. But yeah, it's like now that we know better, it's not as great as it used to be. That's unfortunate.
True.
True. Anyway, but the elements from it, like you said, that we take from it with the mine carts and everything, those are the things that we can say, hey, that's cool. And it's obviously been handed down to other movies and other things that have used those same action scenes over and over again at this point. So
this episode, that beautiful scene on the bridge that's so iconic to watch and it was recreated so beautifully. And
yeah, that freaked me out though, because I was thinking when I saw that, all I could think of was Kylo and Han, and I'm like, I want to look.
Oh Lord!
I'm just waiting for somebody like at the end of the bridge to be on Ben.
No!
So sad.
Because the lighting was like that. It was all red, and like it was I was all getting flashbacks. I'm all no.
That was definitely a tough moment to watch. Oh, yeah. 2015, seeing that in the theaters for the first time. Oof. I get goosebumps just.
I had my mom sitting next to me, and there had already been a lot of deaths in the family earlier that year, so she was still very sensitive. And seeing what happened to Han, she was a mess. She was inconsolable. I had a hug her. I was like,
oh, poor thing. Bless her. Jesus Christ. Oh, but definitely totally understand. It's Harrison Ford. You never want to see Harrison Ford.
Right? Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So don't do that in Dial of Destiny. Don't you do that. Don't you sequel trilogy Harrison Ford in that. Exactly. Show that man some respect. He deserves to live. It's interesting because with Temple of Doom, like I think Star Wars is kind of like a good application to take some of those Temple of Doom things. And by Star Warsifying it, right, it kind of makes it sensitive. Because, right, you're not depicting any particular culture in any particularly malicious way. It's like taking the typologies, right? Like a oppressor, a Mola Ram, right? And dude, I forgot his name. And then the child labor camp and, like, all those things. And then place it in the, you know, fiery pit of hell, cave, cavern system. So it's really fun to, like, see it that way. And which I'm very curious, like, if all this season specifically is going out of its way to like make all these Indiana Jones references, because they've been
a lot.
So, there's like, been a lot of them, yeah.
Like almost every single episode has had like one Indiana Jones thing.
From the Let It Go moment that happened like in the first episodes, I was like, well, that was almost on the nose. I was like, what the heck, right?
I mean, it's beautiful. I like it, but I'm curious to know like what was going on in the writer's room.
This has been. Right. Yeah.
Can you imagine being like, this is Indiana Jones season, so let's just sprinkle as much as we can in there. And who knows, maybe they're giving us like Dial of Destiny things and we don't even know it, because obviously the movie's not out yet. But then when we rewatch, it's like, oh crap, they were sprinkling things in there.
There you go.
I don't think so, but it's so I can dream. One of my favorite scenes in the episode, and I want to hear what everyone thinks about it, is when they have, I was going to say Ahsoka, when they have Omega, like, in the bridge. And, you know, they're at the edge of the bridge. And then Hunter goes out to save her. And she does the leap of faith. I was just like, bam. Okay, I'm not a Hunter stan. But this moment really kind of sealed the deal. Especially because she lets go and puts herself, you know, and just throws herself. Because she knows that he will catch him. And it's such a powerful moment. I want to hear what everyone thought about it. Mark, you're our guest.
So we're talking about the moment with like the robot where like they were hanging off the edge, right?
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. So the fact that, number one, the trust that she has in her crew at this point, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, in her family, let's say that. But the fact that she was willing to sacrifice herself in such a way, I mean, it's like, that could have really went bad, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and
yeah.
I'm sitting there, I was like, oh, they're not going to, oh, she's doing it. Like, and then she just full on just like takes them both down, right? And I'm like,
yeah.
I could not believe what I was watching. And I'm like, but this is so cool. Cause like, yeah, the fact that like she was saved in the end, that to me was such a moment for that character. Like she's grown a lot. And that is a moment of maturity that I was not expecting so soon, I guess. Right.
Right.
So I'm really pleased that they did that with the character.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's really interesting when you put it that way, because I think one of the complaints that was hurled at that was given to Bad Batch in season one was that they always have to rescue Omega. And, you know, Omega's always in distress and she always has to be rescued. And in this scene, even though, yes, technically she is in distress and she has to be helped, she's still empowered and she's still a part of her rescue. And she takes an active lead
into how
it happens, which I think it's a kind of a nice growth, right? In terms of like her growth, not just her growth for her individually as a person or a character, but also in how she is participating with her family in like all these relationships. Nani, what did you think about that scene?
Yeah, I thought it was great because they turned a moment that could have been, you know, her as liability because they took her hostage, so it would put the rest of the batch in danger. But she took that moment, her and Hunter, and turned it into a strength. So they got rid of an enemy and she stopped being a liability because they didn't have her anymore. But yeah, that moment when she sees that, like, Hunter has jumped in after her, there's like no hesitation on her part. And it's just like grabbing the robot, the droid, sorry. And then just like, it's such an impactful moment to see like her just like taking the droid with her and like the separation of both of them, then Hunter grabbing her, and it's so beautifully shot and it's emotional and it's great. And there's so much trust. It's very similar to what happened in the previous episode when she falls in the cavern and Tech doesn't even hesitate, just right after her. So I love that they're establishing so much that it's not just, oh, we have to take care of each other. No, it's we are a family and we trust each other and we're there for each other. And the fact that she is getting more responsibility, like it was her idea to track Gunky. You know, which was so great. Everybody's like, there's no way we're going to find our ship. You have to let the ship go. And she keeps coming up with ideas on how to rescue it because it is their home. And it is important to her. And it's important to them, even though they didn't really want to admit it all that much. It's like, oh, it's just a mode of transportation. But no,
they
know it is their home. They don't have another home. That's it. So the fact that she's been active in achieving these goals with them and that they trust her to do it and that other people can realize that this is going on, because Benny was like, oh, wow, they let you just like join them.
Yeah.
You're part of the team. Like, this is unheard of. They don't boss you around.
You're not an employee, right?
Exactly.
And that's just like, even before they even intervene directly, they are already setting an example of how people can interact in healthier ways. Mm-hmm. So I love that what they're doing, honestly. I don't understand how things are filler when you're developing these relationships so well.
Yeah, especially something that was, I think, missing from season one. Not to say I didn't like season one, but I think season one was missing kind of like those individual character moments, right?
Right.
Like
letting some of these characters shine.
It was so Hunter heavy.
It was kind of exhausting
to an extent. I am missing a little Wrecker. I don't think Wrecker's gotten like too much love in this season yet. There's been a lot of like love for Tech, and rightly so. But I still think, you know, Wrecker needs a little loving too.
I think we need some more Crosshair mixed in all this too, because regardless of whether we like it or not, he's still part of the Bad Batch, and what's going on behind the scenes now, because eventually you guys are gonna have to meet up again, you know. I want to see more of him.
I think that episode of Solitary Clone was
one of the best ones so far.
Yeah,
I always love me some Crosshair, Because you also get to see how everything's happening, you know, from the Empire side as well. So it's I always love it when you kind of see from both sides what's happening and how people are reacting to the things that are happening. And we know that Rex and Echo are out there doing something, and Captain Brody's out there as well. So like, there's a lot of angles to things that I think a lot, like you said, Mark, at some point, some of this is going to come to a head because we still have 6 episodes to go, I think, right?
Yes. Yeah. 6 episodes. But I really appreciate what you just said, Nani, because it kind of puts in perspective the differences of like how season 1 developed versus how season 2 is developing. Because season 1 was all about the reckoning, right? The post fall of the Republic reckoning, and like what's happening with the remnants of the Confederacy and the Separatists. Well, there was the same thing. The remnants of the Separatists and what happens with the Empire. So it was very binary. Right, in that sense, it's just like, well, this is the Empire and then the post-war Separatists and what's happening kind of with that transition right into the modern Empire that we know now. And this season, it's different because it's not about that anymore. It's about like, yeah, we know the Empire sucks and we know that everything is terrible under the Empire, but there are unintended consequences now of like having an evil regime like the Empire be in the galaxy. And that means that evil spreads into all the galaxy and it's not all just Imperial. So like we're seeing a lot of like that with this episode, right? The Empire's not in it, but we still see that, you know, there's some bad faith actors in the galaxy doing some bad faith things. And it's really interesting for the Batch. Like I've seen it that way. It's just like they're soldiers, but the war's over. But the enemy is not, you know, it's not a tangible enemy anymore. It's an enemy. It's a social justice, you know? It's just like you have to like kind of find like where those signs of oppression are, and they don't fall neatly into the category of like, well, there's the flag and they look like this and that's the enemy that I have to attack. It's like very different. I think that kind of adds a really beautiful complexity to like how Bad Batch Season 2 has been developing that I really appreciate, especially like when you look at it in hindsight, because when you're looking at like in the moment, it's just like, okay, well, this is fun, but then you kind of like start seeing the collective and it's like, okay, that writer's room, they might know what they're doing. They might be professionals.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe.
Yeah. I really hope that, you know, they figure out those union contracts because, those writers deserve a raise. They should go on strike if they don't, you know, fix their contracts. So writers, go on strike or negotiate in good faith. I mean, not them. You know what I mean. You know what I mean. Next week is going to be wild because we have Mando season 3 starting. So it's going to be like a lot of content, a lot of Star Wars from different perspectives. Because one is like post episode 3 in the height of the Empire. And then like Mando's in post Empire days, pre First Order. So it's going to like, we're going to be, you know, vacillating back and forth between those two things. So it's going to be really fun, really exciting, really busy for all of us, I think. Right. I'm sure that, the Pudu crew is going to be, you know, doing all the things.
We have all that. We have The Last of Us. We have Picard. I mean, it's like, come on. Wow. It's like, there's a lot of stuff that we talk about. So, yeah.
I have not seen Picard, even though I've heard very, very, very good things about it.
Oh, it's good.
Is this the last season?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Today's episode was really, really good. I was like, okay. I kind of have an idea where we're going with this. Well, but this is pretty cool.
Yeah, I don't have Paramount Plus. I need someone to give me a password, please. Anybody. Well, not anybody, because I don't want to be beholden to the favor. But speaking of future content and everything that's going to happen with Mando and Bad Batch, we've passed the halfway mark already with Bad Batch. So we kind of know we know what's happening, so we kind of know what might be happening there. Mark, what are your theories? What are your expectations? Your responsible speculation, so to speak, for what's coming either in the next episode or what you hope to see for the rest of the season of the Bad Batch?
What's up ahead? So, I mean, I have to say, I absolutely loved, and even though it was some, you know, heartbreaking to see, it's like that whole thing that happened with the Emperor and having, you know, where they were trying to make it so like the clones would have the upper hand, but all it did was end up ushering the era of the stormtrooper in, right? Yeah. And so we're going to see that here real soon. Whether that it leads to a big battle between what's left of the clones and the stormtroopers will be really interesting. So I'm hoping we get to see a little of that.
Like right? a clone trooper rebellion
type of thing? Yeah, yeah. Oh, it would be great. Man. I would love to see a little of that. Because, you know, they're basically going to be told, you know, we don't need you anymore.
Ooh, so
like
what
happens then,
that,
right? What happens then? So, yeah, I'm curious to see how they're going to handle that part of the story and, you know, where that all comes to head and what that means for Crosshair. Because whether you like it or not, he is a clone. So are you going to be part of that, like, you know, phase out or not? So, those are the things that I'm looking forward to seeing get wrapped up.
I like that. I got chills when you said the clone trooper.
Yeah, that sounds really
That's going to
cool.
be awesome.
I really hope that happens.
Nani, how about you? What do you think? What do you think is going to happen? And you can't can't copy that answer because that was too good.
Yeah. it was excellent. But yeah, I think we're definitely going to get more Crosshair. Because I think it's everything that's going on, it's something has to happen there, obviously. And I think we're really going to get what's going to happen with Cid and what her relationship has been with the Bad Batch. And it's going to either fall apart completely or it's going to turn out that she sees them as more as a ways to make money and it's going to strengthen the relationship. So I think that can go either way. And I think that is definitely going to happen soon, I think, because there was a lot of sketch stuff going on when they called her and she's just like that's not my job, it's not my job to save you,
right? So. it's because there's a lot of there's a lot of like loose threads that I think that they need to we don't know like how many seasons Bad Batch is gonna have.
Is there gonna be one more or are you wrapping up at the end of this? What's up, you know?
Because depending on like what they decide to do with Bad Batch, which hopefully at Celebration they'll say like what's the future in animation is going to be and hopefully confirm there's going to be a next season. But assuming that there will be a next season, I think that they can leave some dangling elements there for setup for the next one. But assuming that there isn't and this is it, which I don't think it is, they kind of need to wrap up a lot of things because one of the big ones was that cliffhanger in season one of Mount Tantus and the cloning facilities. Oh, yeah. Right,
oh,
it's just
yeah.
like that's a big cliffhanger that they just dropped at that season finale. So it's just like to all of a sudden like not even pick that
mention
up
it,
again.
Nothing.
It's just what was that? That's like a Marvel post credit scene that gets nowhere type of thing. So hopefully that thread gets picked up again. And that means that there's a lot of things because obviously I think your idea of the Clone Trooper Rebellion just makes total sense. Because it's like, what's going to happen with them? And the safe, tragic answer is that, something horrible happened to them and they were executed because there was an uprising or something. That makes sense. But then, the Cid thing, I forgot the other
one. I had a weird thought, too. It's like, they easily already had an Order 66 for the Jedi. They could easily, you don't have to implant it in the stormtroopers, but they could do a mass wipeout yet again.
Yeah.
You know? So, that's so sad.
They're not trustworthy. They need to be eliminated.
Order 666.
Yes, exactly.
Well, we have to Star Warsify. That's too direct. It will be Order 66.6, I guess, or something like
something. That. Something. Yeah.
Oh, that would be horrible. Oh, man, you broke my heart. Oh. Now I'm just going to cry myself to sleep thinking that that's the ultimate Papa Palpatine contingency to get rid of the clones.
Have a little coquito and then take a nap. So.
Yes, 100%. I'll be taking out the bottle of rum for that one.
Go.
Oh my god, I'm inconsolable. Anyway, before I dive into a deep hole of Star Wars depression, thank you so much, Mark, for like joining us. I think we hit
so many
fun things. Why don't you tell us what you guys are going to be up to at Abraxium, or if you have any other things that you'd like to share with everybody?
Well, you can catch me on Sunday evenings at 6 p.m. Pacific time on the Shooting the Poodoo with the Abraxium folks on there. We have a lot of fun. We cover a lot of different subjects. Of course, Star Wars gets brought up.
Of course.
But yeah, join us then. You know, it's a group of people just chatting it up, talking about all things geeky. And if not, you can find me on Twitter and on Instagram at I am El Diablito.
And we will be leaving links to all of that down in the description below. Sweet. So please, please make sure to follow them. The Poodoo crew and Mark are amazing, beautiful people. This season for us, for reviewing Bad Batch, has kind of been a Baraxium takeover. Because we've had you, we've had Chris, we have Raven, Claire's coming on
awesome.
Later. So like this has been the Triad Baraxium Bad Batch review season collab. So nice. Thank you so much for joining us.
Awesome.
And with that, Nanny, wrap us up.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Mark, for coming on here yet again. And I'm sure it's not the last time either. So these are always great conversations. And well, we are the Triad. We have the rest of Bad Batch season 2 coming up. Next week, we have Mando season 3 premiere. And so we're going to be doing both of those. We'll probably do one last kind of episode of the week, episode of ours before we start doing both shows. And that's what's coming up next. And then everything Star Wars that keeps coming, we're going to be around. We have so much awesome, awesome stuff that is coming out for Star Wars. So a lot of things to look forward to. So until next time. We are Triad of the Force. You can find us wherever podcasts can be found.
And whenever.
Just search Triad and whenever. Just search Triad of the Force and you will find us. Remember to like, subscribe, and leave us a comment. And until next time, may the Force be with you.